Reservation was not generally recognized. I mean, 1968 was like urban renewal time, and you know, mm-hmm. where the general feeling was that a lot of these buildings are expendable. And in the case of Hudson, I don't think there's that feeling. And one of the things that disturbs me is that Galvan Initiatives seems to be focusing on the south side of Hudson. South side of Hudson has been doing very well on its own in many ways. There are, you know, were lots of houses that needed to be restored and renovated, houses that had been perhaps owned in the same family over generations, or you know, whatever. But the really important contribution, it seems to me, would be to take some of those wonderful vernacular houses on the north side of town and bring those back, rather than, you know, trying to focus on the south side, where things have been moving along with individual people making the investment in their homes.
Except, of course, the larger historic buildings on the north side.
Well, yes, but they're, you know, just right. I'm talking about right. individual, you know, residential properties.
Mm-hmm. If you were to, if you had Mr. Galloway's ear, what would you like, you know, what would you say? What would you like to see them do immediately? Like, what would be the first thing?
Well, I don't know what I would like to see them do immediately. They seem to be stepping up. This is just observers, and I'm sure Tom can clarify. They seem to be stepping up activity at 202 and 204 Warren Street, which is an apartment building, a building that was originally designed by Michael O'Connor, who was one of Hudson's rather celebrated architects. And also the building, I think the number is 356 Union Street, which is also a multiple family dwelling. But what I would like to see them do is, well, first and foremost, I'd like them to restore the original porticos to 202 and 204 Warren Street, which have been gone for years. And I was told many years ago by Kevin Walker that the columns are stored in the warehouse, the warehouse on, I think it's on 7th Street.
Kevin Walker was Mr. Galloway's associate.
He was his project manager. Right. I think that was his term. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think I would like a clear statement from them about what they intend to do. Mm-hmm. Because we get statements, you know, sort of in the press, and then if you look at the documents that they filed with the Charities Bureau, it talks only about creating low-income housing. So I don't, you know, we need to know exactly what they intend to do. And I think it would be nice to get some of these properties, particularly the multiple unit properties, because so many apartments have been lost when Galloway has acquired a building and emptied it of tenants. And there's, you know, there's that building that I mentioned on Warren and Second that has 6 apartments in it. There's the building in the 300 block of Union Street, which probably has 8 or more apartments in it. And then there's the building on the corner of Union and Fifth that used to be called Apartments of Distinction, where there have to be there are 4 floors, so I'm anticipating that there are like 12 to 16 apartments there. Maybe not, but it, you know, maybe fewer. But it would be nice to see some activity there.
Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you for joining us. Carol's going to stay in the studio and maybe back a little later. We're going to take a quick break. And Dave Marston, the alderman from the First Ward, and Tom Smoke, the executive director of the Galvan Initiative, will be with us when we return. So thanks for joining us on At Issue. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. And we're back. Just having a little technical issue. Okay. So, again, we're with Tom Swope, who's the executive director of the Galvin Initiative, and Alderman Dave Marston from the First Ward, where many of these properties are located. So that was, you know, and Dave, you actually ran for office on with concerns for these properties. So would you like to sort of...
Well, I think it'd be fair to let perhaps Tom address some of the issues that Carol raised.
Okay. Anyway, Carol brought up a number of, you know, issues, and I'd like to address a few of them just individually. 345 Allen Street, which is Eric Galloway's own house, is actually a remarkable... I mean, he actually... In that house, with the exception of the marble lintel, which I would agree with Carol, that was a mystery to me why that had to be removed. But it was, and I'm told it's safe somewhere. So, you know, ideally, it wasn't... I don't believe they cut it. They did cut it. They did remove it, though, to put on the portico. That portico is based upon plans that were drawn up. It was an alternate plan for the facade of the house. So apparently there is some historic precedence for it. In other words, there were different options for how they would put in the front doorway or whatever. And although the columns do come from somewhere else. But the interior of the house is remarkably intact, and he did have great respect for it in that case. The General Worth house was really a ruin. It was, on the outside, it looked pretty historic in many ways, but the interior had been semi-gutted, and the second floor was totally redone in the sort of 70s with drywall, and not a single bit of trim remaining, not around the windows, the doors, nothing. The staircase was a Victorian staircase, and there were some mantles that were from the Colonial Revival period. There was nothing left of the early period except for maybe one or two doors. And his engineer, Eric Galloway's engineer, felt that the front wall was in such bad, had bowed out so badly that it had to be taken down and rebuilt. And I don't necessarily agree with the prescription he came up with, but I'm not an engineer. And as a member of the Preservation Commission, we did rule on it, and we just decided that so long as the historic appearance is maintained or restored, we were okay with it. It turns out, because of the way the wall bowed, it was a three-course brick wall, a lot of the bricks had gotten stressed and were cracked. They didn't have enough original bricks from the house itself. So they were able to find bricks from the same period, from that house at the corner of 66 and Route 9H, and use those to fill in for the bricks that were missing. So it's a combination of the bricks from that house and the bricks, original bricks from that wall.
So I'll mention just quickly for people who don't know that Tom was the, until recently, was the chair of the Historic Preservation Commission.
Yes. So, you know, in that case, it is a new house within an old shell. There are the original beams still remaining, although they're hidden for the most case. They are in the basement. But there really wasn't as much as people might have thought there would have been in that particular instance. And Willard Place, I mean, that is... You know, new houses, I have less problem with new houses that are historically inspired. You could say it violated the neighborhood, but people, I think, going down that street are find them attractive. I don't know. But I guess that's the main thing I would say to Carol's concerns. I mean, there are a lot of different things, but David, do you want to say something?
Well, I think rather than sort of dive into the particulars about each property, I think I would rather highlight Carol's question and just sort of get a sense. I think there's a lot of confusion and a lot of mistrust and a lot of sort of rumors flying around about what the Galvans' intent is with the buildings they already have under their purview and the buildings that they are continuing to acquire. I think I do agree with Carol. I think there is some precedent that has been set that does give cause for concern for historic preservationists. But I think there's a larger sort of economic development perspective on this. And I think Carol touched on it lightly, which is there are a number of middle-income apartment buildings that have sat vacant for some time now. And there has been seemingly no initiative to begin restoring those and bringing those back to the market. And I do know that as our city has become more popular with artists and musicians, and the youth have found Hudson to be quite a enterprising and intriguing place to live, have a difficult time finding apartments within their income range, because as Carol had also said, a lot of the buildings that people have moved in to start renovating have turned them back into single family homes, and there's nothing wrong with that process, but I think we need to stay aware of the fact that we have to continue to be appealing to that particular demographic, and I think Galloway is wielding and a sort of I don't want to throw around, you know, adjectives that are pejorative, but he's wielding an undue significant influence on the south side of the city with all of those apartment buildings. Additionally, I think a lot of people, at least particularly on my block or in the first ward, have found Mr. Galloway's relationship to us to be a little bit imperial. For instance, he acquired a building that I think Sarah Sterling's nephew or someone owned for some time and made no movement to do anything with, and it sat vacant with broken windows and trash in the yard. And so we made an initiative to try and clean that up, and Galloway acquired it and then proceeded to cut down. I helped conduct a tree survey in Hudson, an 180-year-old Norway spruce, for apparently no reason, because now the house is sitting vacant as it was before, and we've had some issues, and you and I have spoke about perhaps putting a fence up in the back, you know. And I guess this, I mean, the same thing happened at the apartment building up on Union, additionally with a tree at 123 Union. So there might be arguments for cutting those trees down, but none of us have heard it. And so it sort of treats the neighbors and the neighborhood and those of us that have a passion for where we live with a sort of malevolent imperialism that I think is what underlies a lot of the distrust. And so I think perhaps if Tom could maybe address a couple of those issues, and I'll let you go ahead.
Okay. I think it's a very legitimate thing about the housing issue in Hudson, and that is something I would like to see us address, and we're going to begin to. I think that, you know, you have to... Eric came into town, and he bought a lot of properties, and... It would be hard to justify economically redoing them in this climate. Now, underneath the guise of the foundation, we can make it make sense. And I think that they stood empty partly because it was hard to justify if it was simply based upon a money or return basis. But now, in the context of this newly formed foundation, we can do it. And we are starting to, 202, 204, we hope to get done this year. That'll be 6 units returned to Hudson. And we will restore those porticos. That's part of the plan. We may turn the first floor. We may go before the commission, the Preservation Commission, to turn the first floor into storefronts, which may or may not pass. Regardless, it'll be 6 units. And if we did the storefronts on the ground floor at 202, 204, they would be live-work places. In other words, what we would like to do is have a studio storefront in the front and living in the back, because I do think there are a number of people who would really like that. I mean, I know people who've been asking about that kind of situation, and it's very hard to find in Hudson, and it would be, I think, a great contribution. And 260 Warren Street, we're going to return. It's going to be 4 units. It's going to be a storefront on the corner and 2 apartments above it, so it'll be 2 really nice apartments, and then a single little unit with a storefront on the little rear building, so it'll have a shop in the ground floor and a duplex apartment above it.
So those 260 is the one at Third and Warren.
Warren, with a beautiful marble mm-hmm. trebuchated facade. And then we are going to start tackling 356 Union, and the first plan for that was as a single family, and I've been urging Eric to consider keeping it as a multifamily, because it's actually 3 stories of, you know, we might need to reconfigure, we may need to figure out a better, because apartments are very weird and chopped up. But I think there is a need for housing, and it actually that's a great multi-unit building, just as it is, if we just fix it up and, you know, restore the roof and do that kind of thing. 501 Union Street, there's a plan. Someone has approached us about wanting to condo the building. I think that may or may not be possible, but we're playing with that idea. If not, we will return it to being a multi-unit building, which, of course, it was built as. So we're going to try to start. We have a big backlog. Obviously, we have a lot of properties. We can't do them all at once. But we're, for the first time, as Carol said, we are amping up the activity, partly because now it can make sense. I'd like to talk a little bit about
Can I jump in just for a second? So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think the thing that concerns me the most is that, I mean, and a number of things concern me, but the fact that, I moved here in 2006, and I don't recall a single building of Mr. Galloway's or holding companies or whatever. I don't recall a single building, and in the last census, we lost, 1,000 people, which decreases funding in the city. It decreases our vote, our political clout, because we now have, less weighted vote on the Board of Supervisors. And it's detrimental to the city on a number of levels. I hear you addressing working on these multifamily dwellings, and I think that's the biggest thing that could make a difference in the perception of the organization. I mean, these buildings have been terribly maintained. The sidewalks around 260 Warren and the one on Second are in horrendous shape, broken glass and everything, and have been like that for years. And so the maintenance issue of these properties, even if they're not getting worked on right now, I mean, the basic maintenance stuff is not being done. The sidewalks are not shoveled when it snows and all that kind of stuff. So it's the sort of lack of respect to the neighbors that is that issue. And when you add up the number of properties, it's not unsubstantial that the number of people that are missing from this city. And I think that's one of the things that really could be a game changer. I mean, I'd like nothing better than the organization to succeed and to be hailed as a great asset to the city. But so far, the track record is so great.
Well, since 2006, I mean, 34th South Second Street gets almost no mention.
Well, that was before I was here. Anyway.
No, that was just completed this
year.
Oh,
well, those are newly built, new buildings.
No, 34th South Second is next to Tim Dunleavy's house.
Okay, all right.
It's a historic house that he purchased a number of years ago, and it actually was remarkably intact inside. Most of the properties we buy are not intact, folks.
Mm-hmm.
They are badly renovated, if they were renovated, badly lived in, poorly maintained before he got them. So, there really hasn't been an opportunity to do a restoration. In 34th South Second, there was. He did left the trim in place as every bit of molding. It is, the contractors were a little frustrated because it had brick nogging in the walls, and he left the nogging in place, which is, usually people rip it out to insulate. And that is actually a restoration. He left the original windows. He got permission to replace the windows. He thought, they're in good shape. Just leave them and put storms up. So he did, sort of in a very quiet way, an unheralded way, really do a restoration, and it's now rented to someone, and it's going to be, this person is very house proud. It's
he's beautiful. Really excited about it.
Yeah, no, it's a great house.
It is, and to credit, I think that house has been done nicely, and it was done in an unheralded way, and I think there is room to give credit where it's due, indeed.
But my correction. I'm sorry about that.
So I think going from here forward, I would like, I'm trying to urge us to have more respect for the historic fabric and to rip out less. And I'm trying to be a little bit more systematic. When people go in to clean out, I'm trying to say, let's take down the obvious new things, leave the old. We can reconsider it and see if it works. And then if we can keep it, we will. And if it doesn't work, we won't. Mm-hmm. But I'm not just going to have people go in and wholesale gut it to the studs, which is what we've been done in the past, mm-hmm. in many instances. So it's a work in progress. But I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the history. There are two different aspects of the foundation. One of them is a grant giving. Eric and Henry have been here for about 10 years, and they have given money quietly over the years. And last year they gave over $100,000. And without any press whatsoever, they've been giving to things, as diverse things as the Hudson Opera House, TSL, Operation Unite, that Perfect 10, which is the little girls program that Paula Foreman started, Hudson Area Library, of course, Flag Day, the Hudson Little League, local artists, and then planting trees on State Street and Second Street, which is an ongoing initiative. Every year he'll plant.
I received one of the trees, and I thank the foundation
That's
for that.
Largely Henry. One of the missions for this year.
Can yes. I just interject there?
Yeah.
Was it a Japanese lilac? That mm-hmm. I mean, I love that species, but it's totally inappropriate for a northeastern street tree. I would advocate that, and I'm trying to do this on the city level is put together or reform, as it were, the tree commission that was formed a number of years ago to initiate some more plantings on Lower Union, where it seems to have stopped. And so I would love to be able to perhaps work with Henry if that is one of his projects that he likes to be involved with, to maybe pick more appropriate species.
How do you pronounce Henry's last name?
Van Ameringen.
Okay.
So the things we want to do this year, we're going to, in the next few years, is get a new 21st century home for the Hudson Area Library. The foundation is buying the Little League field from the Elks Club and renting it back to the Little League for $1 a year. Developing a plan, we feel that we might be able to help the county and the city solve the long-standing homeless problem. The county has been paying millions of dollars a year to put homeless people into motels scattered across the county.
And even in other counties.
Yes, and so we think we might be able to do something with that. We're talking to them.
But not at Fifth and Warren, right?
No. No, actually not.
Because I wanted to bring that up because I thought that's reflected a little bit of the disconnect, perhaps, between, I think, what the public's perception of the direction and trajectory of the city and perhaps Galvan's, or at that time, Mr. Galloway's perception of the trajectory of the city. To put a transitional housing building at that location, I mean...
He actually made a pretty good case for it to me. I thought it was very interesting. I mean, supportive housing is different than just sort of putting people in a building and having it, meaning to be security and social workers and things like that there.
But at the center of our commercial district?
They're already here. You know, people are just in denial. We have, you know, they're staying in the Warren Inn. They're in various substandard apartments.
Hudson has always and continues to be the de facto site where all social services seem to think this is the most appropriate place in the county to yeah. house and support.
And it is.
Well, there are certainly other towns and villages that have shopping that have a town center that it doesn't all have to be in Hudson. I mean, in many ways, certainly Greenport.
Hudson
makes
burdens
more sense.
A tremendous amount of the responsibility, the social responsibility of this county to support the disadvantaged and the disenfranchised, and with this also being the county seat, that puts a tremendous burden on the tax base here. And I just think it's visionless to say that Fifth and Warren is the appropriate spot to put a 5-story supportive housing structure.
Well, we're not going to do it there.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that I think that reflects it reflects a general sort of disconnect that I think a lot of folks will continue to use as evidence of Galvan's more questionable decision making process.
Well, you can see we did back away from that one. We could see the
Indeed,
opposition.
You did.
That's pretty much it. I mean, 102, 104 Union Street are going to be available for rent in the next, you know, by the summer. So that'll be two more units that didn't exist before.
That's great.
So as far as this, you know, the homeless situation, do you have a plan for where it would be? Or
we have some ideas. It may be 4th and Columbia. Is one of the possible things. We're trying to figure out a number of different ways to go about it. And it's really, you know, anyway, it's a big part of the need in the county. It's not just the city. And the city isn't going to take it all on.
So I think in the press, you've mentioned that the buildings that he's recently purchased are not going to go off the tax rolls. Is that a commitment from the organization?
It depends. You know, it's a case-by-case basis. With the home of the library will be off the tax roll, at least the portion of the building that they occupy that is nonprofit. The foundation offices at 400 State Street, which is the current home for the Hudson Area Library, that will be the foundation offices and whatever other nonprofits, that'll be off the tax rolls. All the other buildings will be, if they're earning income, if they're getting rent, they will be on the tax rolls.
And, I mean, previously, at least when the purchase of the library took place, it was that the library was going to move into the armory. Is that still happening?
I believe it will be. There are several other things out there, and we're trying to balance the different needs. So we're considering other possible locations for the library as well. If someone has developed an interest in the army, that would be incredibly, if it were to come to pass. But I can't even say anything more about it. So we're, you know, because one of our missions is economic development. So if someone comes forward with a great business idea that might actually employ people and make sense, and the building is the only one that would suit them, we're going to listen. And, you know, we're talking to the library. We have some other possibilities. So it's like, but we're not going to, the library is not passive. They have to agree to whatever and be happy with whatever we.
But so my question is, though, that it almost seemed as if it was a quid pro quo. The organization bought the building, and then the building, and then the library was going to move to the.
It was an organic process. When Eric bought the armory and he bought the library independent of each other, and then he bought the armory and he was thinking to himself, and the library at that point was looking to move into 217 Warren Street, renting a place for $3,500 a month plus heating it plus having to do some sort of a build out. And Eric was thinking, what do you do with an armory now that I own it? You know, it's very hard to figure out how you use that kind of space. And it suddenly occurred to him, you know, sometimes these things are turned into libraries. And he called up Teresa Parsons, the president of the library board, and said, what if you were to consider this as a possible new home? And so that's how that started. He did not buy it with that intention. It just sort of organically happened or occurred to him.
Okay. It sure would make a great hotel, and especially
I find that a little harder to see, just because.
Well, if that was the bar scene in the big hall, that you had,
it's overwhelming. But regardless, whatever use it comes to, it'll be very good. Whether it's the library, which would be spectacular.
So you plan on renovating many of these buildings and renting them and everything. Mm-hmm. So how does the organization justify applying for nonprofit status if it's really going to be in the development business, at least on certain properties?
Well, I don't fully understand that world, and it's, you know, I'm just here to sort of make things happen or keep them going. The Newport Restoration Foundation manages it. They get rental income, they pay taxes, and they're a nonprofit. There are antecedents or precedents that we do follow.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I may jump in there, I looked in a little bit to the Newport Restoration Foundation, and indeed, as if you've structured yourself as a foundation, you're allowed to write off the rents on real property. So it would make sense that the Newport Restoration Foundation is able to write off the rents that they receive on the buildings that are part of the foundation. But what's key to that is their exempt entity labeling. The IRS has what they call the National Taxonomy of Exempt Entities, and every 501c3 has to fall into one of these particular categories, as it were. And they fall into A82, which is Historical Society and Historic Preservation. And in order to fulfill that category, there has to be particular merits to meet that status. And so I think a lot of us are, and I think Carol has spoke to this somewhat, so I don't want to belabor it, but how would the Galvan Initiative fulfill those requirements in order to qualify for that particular category?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, if you want to question the right for them to have their tax-exempt status and their existence as a nonprofit, you'll have to go to the attorneys. I mean, that's...
Well, yeah, no, I'm not making the imposition that I am. I'm just saying that in order... I mean, a 501c3 status is a pretty coveted status, and there are relatively strict requirements in order to sustain that status over the long term, especially when it's set up as a foundation, because as I said, you can write off the rents on those buildings. And part of the Newport Restoration Foundation's, dare I say, brilliance is that the renters in those particular structures are also bound by their lease to fulfill the qualification as a it's kind of wild, as a custodian. That's probably not the right term, but part of their qualifying, part of the way that they qualify is by doing that, and by keeping a team of historic craftsmen on retainer for the buildings that they acquire. So I guess I know that that's been thrown around as the model with which Galvan intends to sort of model itself, but I guess I'm confused how that would.
I think we're still figuring
still
that out.
Figuring that out.
And
okay.
we've taken their lease and used it for 34th South Second. We basically took their lease and altered it to be situationally appropriate. But you know, there are a lot of strictures in that lease, which
right.
is all about protecting the building. We don't want to put all this money and restore these things,
right? So you
renovate
are
them.
Right. You are aware of that sort of relationship between the tenant and the
yeah.
the foundation.
So if you just joined us, or you just need a refresher, I'm here with Dave Marston, who is the first ward alderman, and Tom Swope, who's the executive director of the Galvan Initiatives Foundation.
Yes.
Is that right? And coming up at 11 is Al Jazeera English. Al Jazeera English can be heard every weekday here at 11 o'clock. Please check out our Facebook page. We post who's coming on the next coming show, and also all of our archives are posted there. So if you missed a show and you'd like to go back and hear it, or if you're listening to the show and you think someone else might be interested in it, a little later today it'll be posted on the Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/@issue spelled out. And I just wanted to read a public service announcement. The town of Taconic is holding the first of three Saturday town board meetings. The first one will be on March 10th at the Taconic Firehouse. That's Route 82 at 10 a.m. There will be two more Saturday meetings, one in July and one in November. And the board is hoping that Saturday meetings will enable residents who can't easily attend weeknight meetings to participate in town government. So thanks to Deborah Gilbert for sending it off, the newest town board member in Taconic. And so if you live in Taconic and you have issues with the town government, the March 10th is your time to bring it forward. Let's see. I know that Mr. Emmeringen is a philanthropist that has a particular interest in mental illness, and he quietly also makes a lot of contributions to mental illness programs.
And gay causes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, housing for people with AIDS was one of his early initiatives. Eric was involved with that, and that's how they met.
Right. For full disclosure, and many people know this, but Eric Galloway was my landlord in New York, and in that case, I didn't have a great experience. But you know, the point of this show and others, you know, like it, is really to have a full airing and a discussion about various issues. And I very much appreciate everybody joining me today, and also extend an invitation to Mr. Emmeringen and Mr. Galloway to come on as well if they're interested. So we have about 15 minutes left. So anything else that you guys would like to bring forward or discuss?
I don't know. I mean, I think that I would like to say that in some ways the mission is to improve the quality of life in Hudson, sort of thing. It's very broad, and it could be achieved in any number of ways, and we're looking for concrete ways that we can do specific things and make a difference. The property management is more my side, i.e. the development of these buildings or renovation of them. And I think that people should make suggestions, and if they see a need that's not being met, that we could make a difference,
right.
Bring it to us.
Now, former Mayor Scalera, current Supervisor Scalera, is also involved in the organization. How is he a part of it?
He's the special advisor, which sort of means he's here to help us usher projects through the zoning boards, the various boards, because if we need a variance for different things, he'll help us with that process. Also, in the grant-giving part of the charitable wing of the foundation, he will help identify things that would be appropriate for us to address.
I mean, is there any concern on the part of the organization that having the former chair of the Preservation Commission and the former mayor on the payroll would look unseemly?
I don't think so. I mean, that even though I was the putative chairman of that board, I had very little influence. I mean, you know, I simply managed the meetings. So I think that they're pretty independent-minded people on that commission. I think there's very little. I mean, I'll go before them as a supplicant, of course, and, you know, they'll make their decision based upon what they feel is right.
I just wanted to circle back to something that Carol mentioned in her review of the charity application, and I was wondering if we could have a clarification on the low income housing, because I had addressed Mayor Scalera at the Economic Development Committee meeting and asked him sort of directly what the intention was, and he said, well, to provide affordable housing, and there was some discussion about 32 South Second and for the size of that house,
34 South Second,
it is essentially affordable, you know, relative to the scale of the structure. And I think a lot of people have a latent fear that Mr. Galloway is sort of sitting on some of these buildings in order to, as you say, resolve the homeless issue and I guess if we could just have a clear understanding of how that particular element fits into the larger framework, I think it would work to dissuade a lot of the fear.
We don't like to use the word affordable housing because it is so freighted, and it means something very specific when you're talking about it means subsidized housing and things like that. But that's not our intention.
Not, okay.
No. Affordable, in our mind, it's more market rents. But we, for example, I asked Eric about 102, 104, what should we ask for rent? Basically, we're going to be tenant-driven because after putting all this energy into redoing them, we want people who actually live with them and respect them and people who are contributing to Hudson. So we want to make it affordable to relatively...
Middle income.
Middle income, yeah. Yes.
Would the organization agree to something like an 80-20 situation like New York it provides, where you have 80% market rate and reserve 20% for a low and moderate income?
Hudson doesn't have that scale. There's so few buildings with, you know, I mean, 356 Union, if we keep it as a multifamily, it's like maybe five or six apartments.
Well, if five were market rate and one was middle or moderate or low income.
I don't know that we're going to do that. You know, it's not that we'd rule it out. I think there may be other ways we can do affordable, more truly affordable housing, because I do think there's a need for that.
I seriously hope, though, that it is integrated in the city, and rather than you know, using, you know, segregating low income or moderate income people in one place. I mean, it's an old model that doesn't work. I mean, it creates ghettos and it creates an island of the poor around, you know, surrounded by, you know, the rich. I mean, it's not really a great model.
I don't know, you know, how, if the trouble is in New York City, you have, you know, 100 unit buildings. It's much easier to sort of do that. Here, the buildings are so small, most of our properties are single or two-family houses.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about, obviously, a single or two-family or multiple dwellings that are then made into them was single family. I'm not talking about those issues, but the larger apartment buildings.
Yeah, large, six, you know, so you have one unit that's a subsidized housing, and then maybe if you a 10-unit building, you have two. It's not really addressing the problem. I mean, I think in the future, I don't know.
Well, it addresses the problem little by little. I mean, you know.
And we have two buildings like that. That's it. I mean, and then, well, three maybe. We just don't have that many large apartment buildings in Hudson, but I think as a city,
I mean, you have the two. You have the two on Warren and the Warren and Second Warren on Third. You have apartments of distinction.
Third and Warren doesn't lend itself to that. It's only three apartments. 202, 204 is six units altogether. Mm-hmm. That's six. So you have 356 Union, that, and 501, and that's about it.
Right.
I think as a city, however, there should be a strategy for how we address that issue, because it is an issue, and I think that I'm not sure how we can fit into it, but I think maybe we can. It might be in the form of new construction at some point.
So Alderman Friedman has called on the organization to make a presentation with its plan as it is to the council. Is that something that you would consider doing in a relatively short period of time?
Yes, and I'm not so sure I'll do a presentation. I'd like to make myself available to answer questions much as I have today, because I think that's a lot of what people need is, like, I know there are a lot of rumors out there, and, you know, I'd like to hear them, and then, you know, whether they have a germ of truth or they're completely false. Like, the one that was repeated is it's a dodge to take the things off the tax rolls, which is not true, that he's doing low-income housing in all these buildings, which is not true, you know. But people persist in saying these things, even when we have said in our press release and other things that this wasn't the case.
Well, I mean, it also doesn't help that the organization filed for nonprofit status and has not presented a plan. I mean,
we just was formed and we're working out things, and we have certainly definite things we're doing. And through the doing, it's
certainly seeing these multiple dwellings on Warren Street renovated and put back on the market would be a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, and that's our intention.
So a number of people have put forward a proposal for the organization to purchase 900 Columbia or to move 900 Columbia. Is that something that you're seriously considering?
We will look into it. It's a very frustrating situation. I mean,
I'll just give the listeners a quick background. We only have about 6 minutes left, but 900 Columbia is owned by the Mental Health Association, and they plan on tearing it down and building a larger building behind, a more modern building. Both Dave Marston and Carol Osterink have been at the forefront of trying to advocate for the saving of this property. We're going to bring Carol back in because she's sort of more informed about this than anyone. But just going back to you,
we're going to try to have a meeting with the head of the Mental Health Association to talk about it. He was very clear in an email to me. We will not consider leaving it in place. We've looked at it very carefully and won't do it. When I mentioned this situation to Eric, he's been told about it before and he just didn't seem to have any interest this time. He was like, that's a terrible thing. Set up a meeting. So we may try to do that on Monday because Jeff Rovitz made it very clear he's not available on weekends. But Eric's first thing was, well, maybe they're in the wrong place. I mean, it's like, if you have a building, if you own a property that doesn't suit you, then maybe you need a different solution, you know, rather than tear down the building. So we're going to see if we can make a difference.
Unfortunately, circumstance has made it pretty difficult for the Mental Health Association, and I can understand Jeff Rovitch's sort of digging in his heels, because you may recall that a couple years ago they tried to buy two houses in Greenport, and there was this great hue and cry, and we made every effort on the state level to get them to reconsider and move their facility someplace else. But the city has zoned such a very small area that allows these kinds of group
homes.
Maybe
that's the city's fault.
Yeah.
I mean, it's this sort of NIMBY thing, which is, oh, we can't put the supportive housing here or there. You know, it's like we've got to think about.
Well, that is the current situation, and they own that property. And they've, Jeff, I'm afraid Jeff, from, all of the conversations I've had with him, he sees no value in preserving this house.
That's the mindset that's so difficult.
Mm-hmm. And although, many people have said, and it's true, that the historic significance of that house is primarily tied up with its location.
Mm-hmm.
at the crossroads of two historic turnpikes. I would rather see it, move to Union Street to be among its contemporaries.
If it was, I think we will. We want to meet with him and see where we could work with them, and if look into moving it possibly. I mean, I think that all of a sudden the wheels started turning in the head, and sort of like, oh, that could be done. Maybe
it really is one of these things where the organization could come out a hero and have sort of changed the public perception of the organization. Carol, we only have a couple of minutes, but is there anything that we touched on that you wanted to?
Well, I just wanted to make one request to Tom. If you have any influence with the principles of the Galvan Foundation, please encourage them to consult preservation structural engineers who, you know, who do this, because rather than, I mean, I have nothing against the man that they're using, but his background is with bridges and highways. And I think, I truly believe that if you had consulted, or, you know, if they had consulted a preservation structural engineer, a more satisfactory solution for General Worth's birthplace could have been found. Because, you know, old houses have their own, they have their own rules, and post-World War II rules of how houses are supposed to work don't apply to those buildings, because that's not how they were, that's not how they were built to function. So I, you know, I think that, you know, the critically bowed out facade wall, there could have been a, you know, a better solution than taking it down, building a new structural wall, and putting, you know, putting bricks over it that came from another building. So I just, I'm asking you, please, to, well, to try to use your influence there.
It's been a struggle finding the right people, and we're still in that process. I mean, it's, we've gone through contractors and had some not very good experiences and had to go further and further afield. We're trying, but there's some new people who've come on who are very interested in preservation things and have actually studied it. We're hoping to get them more involved.
So we're out of time, but I want to thank my guests, Carol Ostering from the Gossips of Rivertown, Tom Swope, the executive director of the Galvin Initiative Foundation, and Dave Marston, the First Ward Alderman in the city of Hudson. We'll be back next week. And as always, thanks for listening. Coming up is Al Jazeera English on WGXC 90.7 FM and on WGXC.org.